Welcome to Unlapped. We're excited to have you back for another exciting year of Formula One. Katie George alongside Nate Saunders and Lawrence Edmondson. A much needed break between seasons. Laz, I'll start with you. How's the break been going for you between?
It's been good, actually, yeah. As much as I do love Formula One, it is nice to get back home and remember that you've got friends and family and actually go and see them face to face. So that's been very pleasant. But I feel like in some ways it hasn't stopped. We've had like a number of news stories ticking over over the winter. And I know you and Nate were discussing Günther Steiner's departure earlier this week on YouTube. Well, sorry, last week. But we'll talk more about that. But yeah, it's been good. But I'm excited to get back into it. And it feels like everything now is just a few weeks away with launches coming up and then testing in the first race.
Nate, I know that you've been on break, but a little bit busy as we met last week to break down the breaking news that was. You're also on site, I believe, today with McLaren for an event. Can you give us a little tease as to what was going down on site?
I can indeed, yeah. So I was in Woking, which is just west of London for people, for geography fans listening. McLaren, quite early actually, have they told us not to tell anyone what's happening, but something's coming out tomorrow that you'll see all season as their car drives around the track. You can guess what that might be. It won't be the full shebang. Basically, their livery is coming out. I don't think we're breaking any news, but we got to see that, and it's interesting because usually teams do that kind of into February. There's kind of a week or two where everything's clustered together, and we used to get with Haas. They used to just release a rendering of the livery of their car. Kind of around this kind of time, maybe late January. And actually, I always felt that the team that did that kind of got the most press exposure because you're kind of out on your own, and that's the only car that's around for, even if it's kind of the same, it's like, you know, people get that hunger back for seeing new things. So yeah, that was pretty great. And we spoke to Zach Brown and Andreas Seidel as well. Nearly said Andreas Stella, should be over that mistake by now. Stella and Brown in good form, actually. And I think McLaren's going to be one of the teams we're talking about a lot this season. So that was pretty cool. And I was just joking to you guys before we started recording. McLaren's kind of become the unofficial season launch in my head because we always seem to end up there kind of mid to late January. An incredible place. You know, it's kind of, we've talked about it before, haven't we? But something out of a sci-fi movie. Always very cool to go. But yeah, Lawrence is right. You know, just before you know it, you're back in talking about Formula One. I think the Steiner news last week was the kind of the jolt back into things that a lot of us in the media needed.
You say out of a sci-fi movie, the McLaren place is actually in, and
that's right. Sorry, yeah, quite literally from a
Disney
sci-fi
Plus
movie.
Series. Very exciting it is too. Sorry, I just wanted to jump in there. And
No. I mean,
is that cool?
Absolutely fair clarification.
Sci-fi. It exists in sci-fi for real.
Remember, if you're watching us on YouTube, like this video, leave us a comment, and don't forget to subscribe to ESPN for more F1 content. And if you're listening, hit us with a 5-star review wherever you get your podcast. It means a great deal to the three of us. You guys obviously mentioned the news. Laz, we haven't gotten your take on Günther Steiner and Haas parting ways. He will not be the team principal for 2024. If you hadn't heard that news, I think you're living under a rock at this point. Nate gave us some great insight, you know, last week when the story broke. Now that we've kind of had a week to digest and we've heard different comments from Gene Haas as well as Günther, how do you feel about the move, Laz?
I'm still not convinced it's the right decision, but it does seem like basically it came down to a disagreement on where the team should go further. I think Günther was looking for Haas to invest a lot more in their infrastructure. What we've got to remember about that team is that it is unusual in that rather than being a team that has everything in one place at one site, it's kind of split across three or four places. They've got their design office in Maranello, actually at Ferrari's factory. They've got their main kind of like race hub and base where they keep the cars and everything in Banbury in the UK. They've got a base out in the United States, you know, as part of the wider Haas racing operation and Haas automation. And then the chassis itself is built by Dallara in Italy. And so it feels, well, you know, for a while that seemed to work. It's obviously very cost effective to do it that way in that you keep your overall cost down. But I think there is, perhaps it's not always the most efficient way in that, you know, when you are requiring Dallara to build your chassis and build certain components to go on the car, You're reliant on that third party, and obviously you're paying them to do that rather than having the machines in-house that can do that. And then with Ferrari, you know, they get the engine, the gearbox, but also a lot of suspension, well, basically all the suspension components off Ferrari, as much as they can take under the rules from Ferrari. So again, you're kind of reliant on another team. And there's no other team now that is quite as reliant on another in the way that Haas is on Ferrari and other suppliers. So I feel like while that worked for a period, it's probably not going to work going into the future, especially when you look at the investment other teams are putting into their own factories, their own facilities, their own capability in creating things. And for a long time, I feel like a lot of teams in Formula One were definitely underperforming or were underfunded. And that's why I think Haas, when they first joined, could finish, you know, quite high in the championship. Fifth or sixth was realistic. But now I think, given the resources they have, they're down around ninth and tenth. And Gunther hasn't really been completely explicit about what he said with Jean going into these conversations about his future there. But it does seem to be that it was a case that he was suggesting they do more, and Jean wasn't willing to do that, and thinks that the operation they have at the moment can do much better than it is. And that last year and finishing last in the championship was a kind of failure in many respects. So clearly with that difference in opinion, there was a split, and it was the end of Gunther's contract anyway. And so the contract wasn't renewed and he was pushed out. But I think Ayo Komatsu, the man coming in to replace Gunther, has got a massive job on his hands to turn around that team, keep morale up with Gunther going, keep sponsors interested because Gunther is such a big personality, and then also get the results that Gene clearly thinks that team can get.
Passion, drive, and patience. What brings home the winning trophy is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. From superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has got you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to turn your car into the MVP and bring home that win. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hear that? Believe it or not, summer is just around the corner. Luckily, Armor All, America's most trusted auto appearance brand, has what your car needs to get that perfect summer shine. Plus, now through May 31st, we'll give you $5 for every $20 you spend on Armor All products. That means car wash pods, protectant, tire shine, you name it. Find out how to get your $5 rebate at armorall.com. Armor All, less work, more clean. Terms apply.
So Gene said, it came down to performance. Here we are in our eighth year, over 160 races. We have never had a podium. The last couple of years, we've been 10th or 9th, as you mentioned, Laz. He said, it's really all about winning. We have a great team. We have great engines. We have really great drivers. There's no reason why we are 10th. I can't understand how we can be with all the equipment and the people that we have. Nate, now that you've heard, you know, his comments to the media, what do you make of them?
Strange, isn't it? Because the bit that stands out to me there is, with all the equipment and the people we have, and the big crux of the issue, as we understand it, as Lawrence kind of laid out there, Gunther's not happy with the equipment and the resources. That's one of the biggest kind of bugbears that he's had know, if you talk to people in the team, I think we, you know, for people who heard last week's episode, apologies, is kind of, you're probably hearing me say the same thing again. But you know, a lot of the time they say that they're using equipment that's a lot older than their rivals are using. You know, the factory at Banbury is a lot older than a lot of their rivals. So this is stuff that he's saying with all the equipment and the people we have in the modern landscape of Formula One, you know, with this cost cap that was meant to bring teams like Haas to the fore, I don't really think that Gene Haas can stand behind a statement like that. So the team is performing. I think that the performance of the team is reflective of the ownership of the team at the moment. I think that that's a very fair way to look at it. So really, Gene Haas has, you know, kind of taken the given the blame of all of that to Gunther, when really I think you go one step above the rung and you go to him, because ultimately in this day and age of Formula One, with this cost cap, with, you know, revenue share as it is, you know, the revenues are higher than they've been for, well, the entire time that Haas has been in, for sure, there's no excuse for, you know, for being 10th, as he says. But the reasons behind it in his statement, I think, are completely wrong. I think he needs to look inwards on himself. So interesting comments, and I think that, you know, now he's said that, now he's made it about performance, I think all the pressure is on Haas to kind of put his money where his mouth is, so to speak, and actually live up to that. Because it's one thing getting rid of someone like Steiner, someone who's beloved within that team, has basically the face and the brain of the team since they started. Promoting from within, you know, is always comes with its own challenges. I think a guy like Komatsu's been there for a very long time. That's not always the, you know, the best thing. You've got people suddenly who were working alongside a guy who suddenly are now reporting into him. You know, it's not always mm-hmm. not always something that works brilliantly. So it's going to be interesting. But yeah, that comment, when I read it, I thought, yeah, Haas not really reading the room. Gene Haas, that is, not really reading the room very well. Because yeah, it ultimately the buck has to stop with him, and I think he's the you know, obviously Steiner, yeah, you know, it's a results-based business. Steiner has to take some accountability for where the team is at. But I think I wrote it in the piece that is currently leading on the F1 Index. You always felt like Steiner was almost, sorry, a little plug for my own work there on our podcast. It always felt like he was kind of competing with one arm behind his back. You know, he couldn't fully utilize the arsenal that other team bosses and other teams could. And ultimately, the only person to blame there is Gene. So, yeah, I kind of frowned a bit when I read that the first time that quote came out.
Laz, I think it's interesting your breakdown of the current Haas infrastructure. Are there any current teams on the grid who are set up similarly, where their operations are kind of spread out, or historically have there been teams that have found success with that kind of infrastructure?
Not really. I mean, when Haas came in 2016, it was almost like this is the new model of how a Formula One team can work. And it's much closer to almost like a satellite team that you have in MotoGP, you know, where you're very reliant on that team that you're connected to, in this case, between Haas and Ferrari. I guess the closest one is AlphaTauri, or whatever we're going to be calling them this year, and Red Bull. And in fact, they seem to put extra barriers in place historically between those two teams. When they first started, that wasn't necessarily the case, but over the last few years, and in fact, what they're doing this year is they're trying to bring that closer together. So there's much more split of use of resources. But of course, the huge difference there is that you've got two teams owned by the same company, and therefore it does make a certain amount of sense to have it that way. And also there's a natural structure there in that AlphaTauri are never really going to be in a position to compete with Red Bull, because they are the junior of the two teams owned by the same company. So that one, there was always a bit more logic. But I think, yeah, I think with Haas and the model they have at the moment, it is, for the reasons I said earlier, slightly outdated, I think, in modern F1. And it's just going to become hard for them to compete, because if you look at, say, Williams as an example, another team which has struggled massively and was in a similar situation to Haas in recent years, where a lot of the time it was a struggle for survival rather than, you know, meaningful ways of moving the team up the grid. Well, they now have their funding more or less in place, and already they're looking at ways in which they can build on the infrastructure they have, their aging infrastructure at Grove near Didcot in the UK, where they're based. And one of the things that James Fowles, the Williams team principal, did recently was lobby the FIA to change the financial regulations to allow them to have more capital expenditure, so more expenditure on those facilities. And he managed to open up a bit of spending there. But it doesn't seem like Haas is willing to do the same thing. And, you know, I just don't, it's hard to know how, under a budget cap situation as well, how well they could, you know, improve it. But, you know, that's why I'm not a team principal, I guess, is because I don't have full insight of it and where the money would be best spent. But yeah, it's a tricky one. And the other thing that was interesting from Gene Haas's interview with the Formula One website that came out the day after Günther was announced as leaving the team is that he said he has no interest in selling it or even selling a stake in it, like we've seen with Alpine recently, where they had those, you know, some very high-profile investors come in and put money into the team, money which partly will go into the infrastructure of the team. And Gene Haas says, you know, I've no interest in that. You know, I want to run it my way. I don't want people coming in and telling me how it's done and then also expecting a return in a few years and leaving the team, which apparently is what they've experienced when they've had these kind of conversations with potential investors. So Gene is very much committed to doing it his own way. And I guess time will tell as to whether that's correct and whether perhaps some of the ways Günther was managing the team weren't the most efficient way, which is kind of what Gene has suggested. But I'm skeptical going into this season that we're going to see certainly a quick turnaround in their fortunes.
It was interesting. Günther also was able to talk to the media since the news broke. And he said he was stung by the news. And actually, he didn't get a chance to say goodbye to some of the Haas people that he had worked with for 8 years, which seems a bit unfair, quite frankly, but you know, maybe that's just the nature of the business. You know, Nate, I know last week we talked about it. It's been a week since. Next steps for Günther Steiner, like what's the most likely landing place we see, you know, him fall? You know, I think TV would be a no-brainer because he's so engaging and so much fun to watch, obviously, and Drive to Survive. But I don't know the likelihood of that.
No, I would absolutely join you on that, Katie. I think him going back to a team boss role would almost feel like a bit of a loss because we've seen him do that before. And he's so good. He's such an engaging character. I think he could really have a unique kind of take on the sport. But also, if you think about a lot of other pundits, a lot of pundits we get are kind of ex-drivers. You know, that's tends to be, I'm not saying that's the only ones, but he has that kind of unique insight, having led a team for so long, both pre and post COVID, and also having the personality that he does. I think it'd be great. So I'm you know, hoping that is the way. And from what I understand, I don't think he's really that keen to go back into, you know, day-to-day team management. I feel like he's done that. He might go back, you know, if there is a team coming calling for him, maybe it will be a, you know, a wider role, a more consultancy based role. Just on that goodbye, actually, that caused a bit of a stir over the weekend, because in fairness to Steiner, he upheld a commitment he had with the Autosport International award show. I think he would have been excused if he just called them up, you know, and said, I'm not coming, because they had him stand in front of a Haas model car. So, you know, he's literally standing in front of a car of the team that had just binned him off, basically. I think the actual reason he couldn't say goodbye was just timing. He lives out in the States. By the time this decision was made, his contract had expired and Gene didn't renew it. And I think you can kind of understand from Gene Haas's point of view, having Steiner come back to the factory after you just named his successor, you can see why Gene Haas might not be, you know, willing to have Steiner come back. It's just not, if you're Iyo Komatsu, that would be quite it would kind of undermine you a little bit if that happens. So I totally understand why those things didn't happen. I think it was a mixture of timing and just the circumstances of it. But I think, yeah, it's a shame it ended like that for him, because he's been when I think of Haas, I think of Günther Steiner. I don't think of Gene Haas. You know, you barely see it. We're lucky if we see him in the paddock, you know, week to week. So it kind of ended. It was a bit of a damp squib how it ended, but I don't think he's done yet. And yeah, I'm not sure how long his contract will keep him out of the paddock for, but yeah, watch this space, I think. So I've heard some interesting suggestions about what he might do next.
It's been said multiple times on social media, but I think it was said here first when we interviewed Günther last year, that stick him and Mattia Binotto in a Fiat 500 and let them tour vineyards across Europe.
That would be great.
Surely the best use of both of their time and will create the most viewing pleasure. So that's
there's
what
a great
the
show
suggestion is, for what it's worth.
Well, Lawrence, I can't remember the name of the show, mate, but there's a show with two UK comedians, Steve Coogan and Rob Brydon. The Trip, I think it's called.
It's The Trip.
And they basically drive around England and they spend all this time in restaurants doing impressions. That's the vibe. If anyone wants to YouTube something tonight and watch some great British comedy, The Trip with those guys. And that's how I see Binotto and Steiner, just with better accents and just a bit more of a niche topic of conversation. But yeah, that would be amazing. I mean, I would pay good money to watch that show.
No doubt. Real quick, I think you said something interesting. When you think about Haas, you think Gunther Steiner. So Laz, I was pondering this last week when the news broke. Is it a detriment when the team principal maybe is bigger than the drivers, bigger than the team itself? I felt like at some point he became such a star. Do you think that that is a hard dynamic to work through, or am I reading too much into that?
I think you might be right. I think it's even harder when he then leaves, because I remember one of the questions, and it was a quite serious question when MoneyGram, Haas's title sponsor, came on board, is, are you investing in Haas or are you investing in like Brand Steiner? And, you know, and the answer was kind of like, well, you know, a bit of a combination of both, of course, Haas the team. But I think there was an indication there that, you know, part of the reason that MoneyGram got so excited about Haas was the exposure that they get through Netflix Drive to Survive, and MoneyGram being an American-based company. I think, you know, the fact that that's had such success in the US was a key factor. And Gunther, along with Daniel Ricciardo, you know, and maybe one or two others, are the key characters that Netflix always went back to for great content. So one, I hope that Netflix can give Gunther a farewell in some way, in whatever series it pops up in. I guess it would be not this one coming up, but the one after. But secondly, I think it is a big loss for Haas to lose someone like that. And perhaps, you know, that was part of Gene's thinking, was that long term, you know, this can't really become, it's, you know, Gene's name above the door. It's not Gunther's. And maybe that was part of the thinking as well, long term. But it does seem that, I think, above all else, yeah, the reason is stuff we've talked about, just maybe two different views in the way that the team should be going forward. And then the disappointment that Gene Haas has had and was very vocal about in the results last year, and particularly the upgrade package that came at the US Grand Prix last year that just did not perform to the point that won the cars later in the season. I think Nico Hülkenberg's reverted to the old kind of package rather than the update package, which is never a great sign for a Formula One team. So I think it was all those things combined that came to it. But who knows? I mean, I don't want to, you know, put words in Gene Haas's mouth, but I do wonder if, sure, yeah, Gunther's popularity long-term was a bit of a concern because, yeah, he does start to become bigger than the team.
Speaking of another popular team principal, we've got some other news. Toto Wolff and Mercedes have agreed on a new deal. So he will remain team principal at Mercedes through 2026. I don't know if this is all that surprising, but Laz, there was maybe some speculation at the end of last season that they might not come to terms and get this done.
Yeah, I think it was more the fact that Mercedes has underperformed two seasons in a row, and the changes at the top at Mercedes and the people that have left. You know, you think James Vowles, Mike Elliott, who was the technical director until the end of last year, or midway through the year, and then he moved into chief technical officer and then left the team completely at the end of last year. And I think there were just some questions about, you know, is the direction this team going in the correct one? Now, the reality, I think, is behind the scenes, actually, a lot of those changes, I mean, the James Vowles one was hard to control because he went to become Williams team principal and Mercedes couldn't offer him that. But I think a lot of these changes, you know, are part of a new direction that Mercedes are hoping to take at the start of this year. And the other factor, of course, being that Toto Wolff is an owner of the Mercedes Formula One team. He owns one third of it, along with the Mercedes car company owning a third, and Ineos chemical company, which is owned by Jim Ratcliffe, owning a third as well. So I think, yeah, there was just questions that maybe it was time for a shakeup at the very top. But I think that shakeup has kind of happened already under Toto's watch. And, you know, actually Toto wants to make sure that all the changes that are happening at the moment are put in place in the right way. And there is a level of continuity in him that makes sure that it continues in the right direction. But I don't think it's a huge surprise that, you know, he's announced that he's there for another 3 years at the very least. I think it also underlines his hunger, which I think was one of the other reasons people were questioning, you know, he doesn't always go to every race now, which is quite unusual for a team principal. And, you know, he's got a lot of other things on his plate as well. But I think it does underline that, you know, he is still committed to this team and he's going to stay there. And obviously his goal is to make sure by 2026 at the very latest, that team is back challenging for championships. And of course, he'll try and do it in the next 2 years before.
I thought it was interesting. Red Bull sim driver Jake Dennis, he told fans what they can expect from the RB20. And he said, we've got an extremely fast race car again at the Red Bull team. So, okay, shocker there. He said, I would expect us to become champions again unless someone like Ferrari or Mercedes somehow manages to find about a second per lap overnight. I think it's going to be quite a dull season in Formula One with Max probably dominating again. Nate, what say you? Is that the expectation you have if the RB20 is as fast as Jake Dennis says, or do you foresee Ferrari, Mercedes, McLaren making up some ground here?
Well, I've got two parts to this answer. One is okay. Potentially shows my view on Formula E, but I think Jake Dennis is coming at that as a spokesperson from Formula E rather than just a Red Bull driver. I think he's saying Formula One's going to be so rubbish this year, AKA you should watch Formula E, which in my opinion, you'd be better off not doing. But I don't think there's any reason to doubt what he's saying either, purely because we saw how far ahead Red Bull was last year. Obviously, we talked about the fact that they decided, they turned their attention to this year's car so early. Max is just on another level in terms of, his form. I mean, how good he was in 2021 was one thing. 22, he stepped that up a notch. And then last season, I mean, he just destroyed Sergio Perez. It never, other than Singapore and a handful of other races, obviously, that Perez won, never really felt like Max was ever under serious pressure to lose. So I think with that combination, you've got to expect that Max is going to win a lot of races this year. And I think I predicted it at the end of last season. I wouldn't be surprised if he beats his own record again this year, just because of where that team is. As an operation, as a race operation, it's the best on the grid right now. They very rarely take missteps when it comes to upgrading the car. I agree with Jake Dennis, but I think his statement was probably more as a pitch for Formula E. But to be fair to him, he would know better than a lot of people, given the fact that he has that insight into the team. Obviously, it's in it. I don't think he'd be in a position to say that we've made a terrible mistake on development and we've gone the wrong way. Obviously, we'll see a month from now when they're testing, but it would take something pretty monumental for Red Bull not to be firmly in front. And we saw this with Mercedes. When Mercedes got out in front in 2014, they stayed there for years. They had a great car to build on. They had Lewis driving brilliantly for a lot of that time, and Red Bull have the same thing. It's just a formula, and similar if you go back to Schumacher and Ferrari. Almost it's like a cascade effect, isn't it? It just gets better and better and better. But for the rivals, it just gets further and further away. So I hope I'm wrong, obviously, but I think if there is any convergence towards things, I think it'll be closer. Sorry, convergence towards Red Bull. I think we'll get that, going into 2025, maybe towards the end of this year rather than in a meaningful way this season. But maybe last year just killed all of my optimism. I don't know, because I sound quite pessimistic saying all that.
You do.
Yeah. That's fair. If Max doesn't win the first race, I'll reverse all of that. But got to be realistic at this point.
Lawrence, I'll give you the floor to maybe change our minds and get us excited for the season for different ways. Do you have any confidence that Ferrari, Mercedes, or McLaren can make up some ground here?
Yeah, I do. I'm probably a hopeless optimist in this, and maybe I'm kidding myself just to kind of make sure that, I'm still in this position in a year's time and I haven't got bored and left. But I think it will converge. I think it will converge because some of the mistakes that Ferrari and Mercedes made in their concepts right from the very start have slowly been unpicked and understood. And I feel like there's a potential step to be made. And to go back to Jake Dennis's quote, I don't know how seriously we take it and all that kind of stuff. And he says they need to find a second per lap. And that is a huge amount. Certainly if it's relative to Red Bull, that is an awful lot, because Red Bull will make a step over the winter as well. Let's not forget. But then if you look at, say, what McLaren did midway through last year, from the first race with upgraded Baku, which was kind of like a very much baseline upgrade, and then a serious upgrade in Austria, and then continuous upgrades throughout the year. They, relative to Red Bull, they did find about kind of 0.8, maybe even a second in performance over that period of time. So if you go for a big concept change and you get it right, and you can start to, dig away at performance, whereas previously you were coming up against all sorts of roadblocks, then that does deliver a lot of potential. And that's my hope, is that what Ferrari and Mercedes have found since changing their concepts is enough to take a big step. Whereas undoubtedly Red Bull will make a step again, because, you know, they're an incredibly good Formula One team. Perhaps, you know, the size of the step they can take, considering they're more likely to stick with a very similar concept going forward, could be smaller. And that's the kind of convergence that we tend to expect and sometimes see, not always, but sometimes see in regulations, the longer they stay the same. So that's my hope. I may well be wrong, but yeah, I'm at least going to go into the season. Even we haven't even seen a car launch yet, so I'm at least going to, at this stage, retain some optimism that there could be a challenge for a championship.
I just want to clarify, that's my hope as well. It's not my hope that Max does win every race.
I like the balance between the two of you.
but I think, I mean, yeah, I think Lawrence is right in the fact that over the course of a year, I'd be surprised if, let's say, Red Bull are way ahead. I'd be really surprised if they finish the year in as dominant shape, because I think what we did see last year is every team, as they made an upgrade, at least at some point, you know, bar the Haas one we mentioned earlier, people seem to be making steps forward in a tangible way every time. So I think that we are starting to see that now. So hopefully that continues.
Last but not least, we have livery launches. We know all the livery launch dates, I believe, besides Haas at this moment. So I'd ask you before we go, which launch are you most excited for? Laz, I'll start with you.
Well, yeah, so some of these are just the livery. Others are the actual car. And I'm optimistic that Ferrari and Mercedes, which happen on consecutive days, February 13th and February 14th, we should see the actual car. And then we'll get to see how much those concepts have changed visually. I mean, a lot of it, as we know, with these current cars happens on the underfloor and, you know, the way the suspension is set up. But we'll get some little clues, at least, and things we can start to get excited about, the changes. And then, of course, the cars will change their appearance again, going into testing and again before the first race. But we might be able to get these little clues of, Mercedes are trying to do something that Red Bull have been doing for the last 2 years, or, wow, they've come up with a completely novel new idea again. Fingers crossed it works this time.
I think it's always fun when we get new looking cars, and hopefully, fingers crossed. And Lawrence missed a great opportunity earlier when he was talking about teams buying a stake in a race team. He didn't mention Sauber, but Sauber this year obviously have been Alfa Romeo since 2019. They are now stake F1, and hopefully, I mean, their social media activation around it's been a bit weird, but they will look different to what they looked last year. And like, I always find that kind of fun. You get a new looking car, hopefully you have some new colors on the grid. So looking forward to that one. And then how can you not look forward to Ferrari's launch every year? It's just, you know, it's always exciting. And I think I like, you know, the way it's looked in previous years. And they always kind of tempt everyone into believing that maybe they're going to, you know, put a bit more white or a bit more yellow on the car, and they never do. It always kind of looks the same, doesn't it? You know, like was it the Monza livery last year or the year before?
Yeah, that was cool.
If they rolled that out this year, that would be the best livery for a long, long time. So we'll see. But even if they don't, still pretty strong effort.
I do look forward to Red Bull's launch on February 15th, just because we were there a year ago for the RB19 launch. And you're trying to stand there and see the differences between the cars. Like, I'm excited to see if we see any difference whatsoever in that car. And I'm not saying that they need a difference, because obviously whatever they're doing is clearly working on mega levels, but I do look forward to February 15th.
And it's kind of mad, isn't it? Cause before 2022, that was such a standout year for launches, because the car concepts all look so different. And to Lawrence's point there about, you know, we are seeing teams, it always happens, teams converge around, you know, the class leading team. It'd be fascinating to see the evolution of some of those cars from 22, 23, 24. I mean, Mercedes will be a great example, Ferrari as well. I mean, Ferrari, they, you know, their car was the one everyone was kind of obsessed about in 2022 when it came out. It just looked absolutely amazing. So I assume a lot of, you know, be some very cool side-by-sides coming out at that point.
Yeah, Red Bull always hide quite a lot. So, you know, there's some very selective images, and they often do kind of rendered images. So not a true photo of the car, but a kind of CGI version of it. And then you get to the test and you're like, oh, wow, you know, that wasn't at all obvious because you see the car in real life. You think, oh, wow, that wasn't at all obvious from the photos. So, yeah, I mean, as sad as it is, I still, after however many years of doing this job, still get weirdly excited around this time of year. But yeah, we'll have to wait and see what comes up.
How about you, Katie? Which car livery has been your favorite? Which one are you most looking forward to?
Well, I want to see Red Bull, obviously, to see if they make any differences. Mm. But to your point about Ferrari, I just don't think you can. I love last year. Wasn't it on Valentine's Day? It just made perfect sense. Now it's a day early.
But yeah, it was like a live streamed event and everyone was really happy for a day. It was great.
I don't mean to be rude, but I feel like sometimes we, as media members, we pick apart just the execution and the production of some of these launches. Some are really well done and get it. Like, hey, get in, get out. There's excitement, drudge it up, get everybody going, show the car, be done with it. Some of them just drag it on and on and on. And I'm like, what are we doing? You're losing the audience, you know, strike fast. So I'll be curious to see kind of the methods of the madness from team to team.
Yeah, absolutely. Good? And I think, sometimes you hear so many sponsors and partner names. By the end, you're just like, I don't need to hear all this stuff. But you remember that a lot of the launches are a corporate exercise as much as a fan service. So, I think that the media and the kind of social media reaction to launches is always quite entertaining, especially when you're in it. Because if you're British, it quite quickly goes to complete outright cynicism. And I noticed that a lot of my American friends are like, this is the coolest thing I've ever seen. And us Brits are like, this was all terrible. It was tacky. It was when really it was like, you know, an amazing thing. So, I've got to take a step back and not be so British about this year's launches.
Yeah. Americans a bit naive and not quite as jaded yet, but give them time.
Jaded's a perfect word for it.
As always, thank you both for your time and your analysis. We appreciate it. Thank you guys for listening, watching wherever you get your podcasts. Remember, like, subscribe to ESPN for more F1 content. And we'll be back with more news in Formula One next week. Cheers, guys.